Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing tech show. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing tech show. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing. Pulling up swing tech show.
Hey, hey, everybody. This is Link on the Linux Link Tech Show on this wonderful Wednesday, April 14th, 2004. We're going to take a quick intermission, beginning intermission, to give you all time to join us on our IRC chat. Do that, of course, by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, the linuxlink.net, and joining us on channel Pound Tech Show. Be right back at you.
Hi folks, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or I wonder if they would review my product? Or why don't they talk about this? Or maybe I sure would like to support these fellas somehow? Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
You are listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Yes, you are, everybody. My name is Link, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show with, of course, our other hosts, Dan and Alan. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not too bad. How are you?
Good.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, we're a little minute or two late getting on the air tonight because we've been having a rousing discussion of the legalities of using, music clips in the show, and we're trying desperately to find a legitimate reason for us to be able to do so, I guess, without being sued by the RIAA, our most favorite people. Hey, what are you going to do? We have another great show for you tonight again. This is Wednesday, April 14th, 2004, and this is show number, does anybody know? Anyone? Anyone?
I have no clue.
Bueller?
No idea.
This is, I believe, show number 28.
Well, now I'm going to have to check your facts and go count.
I think it's show number 28. We've been doing this for quite some time now. I'm kind of impressed.
Very impressed.
For something that I didn't expect to last anywhere near this long. And the fact that, Alan has been here every damn time and not fallen asleep yet is a miracle.
Yeah, with my schedule, yeah. I'm expecting to fall asleep one of these days.
Alan gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning, He gets home from the show just about in time to roll back out of bed and put his clothes on.
Yeah, someday you'll just hear a clunk on the microphone.
Something like that, yeah.
Gee, why isn't Alan talking anymore?
Anyway, back to the show, I guess. Speaking of the show, let's do our little news.
Yeah, you're right. It is show number 28.
It is show number 28. It's show number 28, folks. And here is the news.
That's a show for every day in the month of February.
That's right. This is This is our news segment, of course, and you can kind of hear it, you know, playing in the background sort of thing. Anyone? Anybody have anything interesting tonight?
For all the lucky people who have to patch Microsoft machines, make sure you get the latest and greatest round of patches from them. It's 20 separate flaws, of which 16 are, I think it says 16 here can be exploited really easy. So, it's, 8 of which are rated critical, the most dire assessment in the Redmond developer's four-level ranking system. 16 of the 20 can be exploited remotely on it, so have fun. Fine, everyone. Use your Windows update or whatever, I guess.
And exactly, you know, exactly why is it that you would want to spend your hard-earned cash with such a thing like that, you know, that you have to worry about this stuff all the time, man. That's
some people get paid to do that, though.
That's just not cool. It's just not cool at all. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
What do I know?
Smoke rolling out his ears, folks. You should see it. One of these days we'll take a picture.
Why not? Well, I think part of that question will be answered in our discussion later on.
I think.
Or upcoming discussion.
Yes.
About Linux on a desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know.
That's my only reason for ever logging into the XP side of the laptop here is to get the updates.
Well, at that point, why bother, you know?
Well, it's only because like the only reason I have it on there is because I do use AutoCAD from time to time. And since that's only available in Windows, I'm sort of stuck there.
So. Don't think it's available for Macintosh, though, right?
Well, it may be available for Mac, but I don't have a copy of it.
Well, folks, there you go.
I only have a copy of the Windows version of it, so.
There you go. The next thing that we need is a version of AutoCAD for Alan that he does not have to use on Windows.
My only reason.
I thought AutoCAD was available for Linux. It's not?
Not to my knowledge, no.
I don't know. Maybe.
At least the copy I could afford is only available for Windows. Let's put it that way.
Oh, there's a ton of alternates.
Well, there are a ton of alternates, but unfortunately at work that's what they use, so I'm sort of bound to keep my experience up in AutoCAD, so I've got to use what they use at work.
Ooh. Bad work. Does not use Linux software. Ooh.
Plus it keeps the resume well-rounded. And that's always an important thing to have nowadays.
You plan on getting fired soon?
I hope not. I want to see if I can actually push 10 years in the same place.
I've done 8. It's an absolute miracle, I think. But
my best so far is 9.5. If I can get to September, it's 10. The record will be broken.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all.
Dan's microphone is up too high. Stop swallowing the microphone.
You're yelling at people, Dan. You have anything?
Dan tends to swallow the microphone as he talks. So.
Any good news, Dan?
Last week we talked about 3D Desk. That was the name of the application, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Patrick had brought it up, and I tried it out. And I don't think you two stuck around. I think it was just Mark. To see all the other fancy schmancy modes that it has on there, like the Price is Right, ViewMaster,
right.
Flip.
You mentioned those,
yeah. Yeah, well, I'll show you guys later on. And I have one of the screenshots. Flip is my favorite mode, obviously, which I posted in my blog. But anyway, it's basically eye candy, and it's really, you know, cool little application. If you have a 3D accelerated driver for your graphics card, now I'm running NVIDIA, it works perfectly. It works really great. It's really lightweight too, it seems. But I noticed there is a cost on my machine, which is interesting. That I went to run a video through MPlayer the other day, and it wouldn't run, and it kept crapping out on me. And I'm like, what the heck? I couldn't understand because it was working fine. And sure enough, once I killed the 3D Death Daemon, it was working after that. And furthermore, I'm working on this article about Linux screen recording. Messed around with transcode again of a VNC record session.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't transcode a VNC record session with the 3D Death Daemon running. So again,
ooh,
it kind of...
The mysterious transcode problem that we've all had problems with.
It buggered out the system. And I think what is going on here is, even though it's kind of lightweight, I think it's monopolizing some processor power, not so much memory. But when I get to the point of doing something extra with video, it just can't handle it.
Yeah, your machine's just not fast enough.
I don't think my machine is fast enough. Would further explain the problems we have with transcoding a VNC recorded session that had a browser in there where it would just suddenly stop when the browser would refresh or the page would change in the session. You recall that, right, Mr. Fessenden?
Yes, indeed.
So, and I know that on a 2 gigahertz machine I had reports of having successful compilations with a browser session going on in the VNC record capture. So I do think some of those video issues with regards to the transcoding of the video and some other video issues, of course, have to do with my machine being only a 400 megahertz AMD K6-3. And had I
a
beefier machine,
banging 400 megahertz, man.
I know I'm not complaining. I mean, there's some things I got to do with the workaround. You know, like I got to shut off the 3D desk to play the video through MPlayer. But hey, you know, that's
well,
a small price.
But
to play.
You don't know if that may be the case wherever you happen to be. So,
on my machine over there, on my machine, I have to shut off the 3D desk. Now, had I had.
Yeah, but it might just not work on the 3D desk, you know?
That's always possible. But anyway, I just thought I'd pass that along. That's the only downside so far to the application, other than the fact it's just eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool-looking eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when Ricardo yesterday was having those fancy things, you know, when
drinking,
OS 10, where it goes, woo, and Genie's down, you know? So far, I haven't seen any other operating system that rotates the desktop in such a manner as it does on the Linux.
No.
Using the 3D desk, which is a really good job.
No. But in all fairness, under Linux with the new KDE stuff, you can do that whole, you know, suck the thing,
yeah, there's
suck
a lot
the
of,
page
there's
down.
There's a lot of eye candy in KDE.
And they have, KDE has this thing called a kicker at the bottom of the screen, which is just like that thing at the bottom of the screen for Mac OS X, and you can have it so that when you go over the icons, it pops the icons up and everything, and it's transparent and the whole bit. So, you know, and that was happening, like, you could do that on KDE 3, which was before very, very shortly thereafter when Mac OS X first came out,
yeah.
And so, you know, all these people who try and tell me that Mac OS X is, like, the best-looking one, you know,
there's a lot of people out there, I think it's kde-look.org, I think it is. There's a lot of people out there who've done some really neat things with the desktop out there.
There's some KDE people who would probably beg to differ. Myself, I do not run KDE because it's a system hog. But, you know, I'm quite happy with running, like, you know, Fluxbox is cool with me. I can make that do some eye candy things, too. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Anyway, anyone else? Anyone?
What else?
Bueller? We had a great
lug
meeting last night.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
LB Lug. If any of you guys that are listening are in the area of eastern Pennsylvania, western New Jersey kind of thing, right smack dab in the middle in the Lehigh Valley area, please... check out the LV Lug. We've been having some really good meetings so far. And last night we had Rick and Chris, who did a side-by-side kind of conglomerative presentation on Vim, which is Vi Improved, of course. And I thought it was really, really good.
It was really, really good.
I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it brought to light a lot of really fun, nifty sort of things that you can do you know, using
splitting of the windows and things like that. It was really neat. I didn't realize it could do all that. I don't usually use it all that often because I don't edit that many files.
See, that's a funny thing. I use it all the time, but I never get into that much depth with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've used the buffers before, where I have more than one text file open. However, I normally do not have before, but I normally do not use the multi-window view thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, ever have used more than one cut and paste buffer ever. Never.
What do you say? It was like 52 of them, I think?
It's a whole bunch of them, right? It's A through Z, 0 through 9, and capital A through Z again, right? Plus some punctuation marks and things like that. So that's kind of cool, and I really enjoyed it. And then we also had our delegates from the BC Lug that came over. BC Lug is a Linux user group down by Philadelphia, and they came up to hang out with us last night. And that was Brian and Mike, right? Brian and Mike, if you guys are listening tonight, hey, man, thanks for stopping up and, you know, come anytime. That was pretty cool to have you. And other than that, what do we have? Anybody have anything else before I start running into my wide
news? I actually, since I've been doing the backups at work on my own, I've been having to restore stuff. It seems to be on a fairly regular basis, and it's been really successful. Not surprisingly, I'm not going to say surprisingly expensive, but it's been really successful. In fact, I've been doing backups on my server for a couple years now, and I never really had to restore anything until the other day when I accidentally overwrote my index.html file.
Oh, boy.
On my main Linux link page when I was doing some work for DEF CON. And I was like, oh, and I just updated it last night, too. What a pain in the butt. But, you know, all I had to do was just pull it out of the backup, and that was bad. You know, everything was okay.
Oh, yeah. And the backup, again, is what? Just using tar, right?
That's it.
You tar it right up. GNU tar is an awesome thing to behold.
So
a lot of people want to do other things, like, you know, they have CVS, so the people commit all this stuff to CVS, and they use rsync to sync up directories, and they do all of this fancy stuff, and they, you know, get these backup managers and use them all. And you know what it comes down to? Run a damn backup with tar, and it works. You know? It just goes. And, you know, I deal with multi-million-dollar database files for my company, and I do backups with tar. And I do tar backups off of NetWare servers, and I do tar backups off of Windows shares and SAML mounts and NFS mounts and you name it, man. And it just works every time, and, you know, I can do whatever I need. It's that's the way to be. And, you know, tar is like ultra, ultra easy to script, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5 seconds, you wrote a script that tars up everything everywhere you ever wanted to put it. And, you know, if you really need some kind of flexible thing that goes out and sucks the stuff off of some other server somewhere, you know, you use SSH or something like that with authentication. You set it up so that it goes out and does it automatically. It's a beautiful thing, man.
Hooray.
Yeah. Yeah. Guess what I saw today?
Well, it wasn't the Punisher because it's not out until this weekend.
That's right. It comes out this weekend.
Wait a minute. How could you have seen anything today? Weren't you supposed to be at work?
I was, but, you know, I was browsing around a little bit on the net during my lunch hour, of course.
Of course.
What did you see today?
I saw over on MacMinute.com.
MacMinute.
Yes.
MacMinute.
Apple is announced. It's kind of like New York Minute, only not. Apple announces faster, cheaper Emacs. Now, this is what they're doing is Apple is announcing that they're going to make a more affordable line of Emac desktops, including PowerPC G4 processors running up to 125 gigahertz, 333 megahertz DDR memory, faster ATI, blah, 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 on and on and on and on and on. Anyway, there's two standard configurations that they're coming out with. One is a 17-inch flat CRT eMac coming out for $799. And that's got a one. Yeah, that's a, man, oh, man.
That sounds good.
You know, I'm in line for that if I could come up with that kind of money.
$17.99?
$7.99.
$7.99?
$799. And that's got a 1.25 gigahertz G4, 256 meg of 333 megahertz DDR SDRAM, 32-speed combo DVD-CD rewritable optical drive, 5 USB ports. Three of them are 2.0, and two FireWire 400s with ATI Radeon 9200, 32 meg video memory, and a 40 gig Ultra ATA 100 drive.
I'm sure you have the yellow dock disk just ready for that.
I do, and that, and you, that's what I was going to do to tie it into, you know, to tie it into like a Linux sort of theme. Yellow dog is just dying to run on that kind of that kind of hardware. The other one, by the way, is. They have a 17-inch flat CRT eMac for $9.99, and that has got 8-speed super drive DVD CD rewritable optical drive with it, and an 80-gig hard drive. So that's kind of the difference. But man, that's some slick stuff. And I also saw, I went over to the grocery store. Today at lunch to grab some Chinese food, you know. They have a little Chinese bar over there.
Where's
that? Over at Wegmans.
Oh, there.
Yeah, man. A Chinese bar at Wegmans.
Yeah, you're lucky you were close to a Wegmans.
Yeah, right across the street.
I got to make special trips.
I went over there and I grabbed Linux Magazine, which just hit the streets.
Oh, which one is it?
Issue. May
is it the one with the super... the action figure dude on the front?
I don't remember, but the big article on the front of it is Linux. It's PPC Linux. So they're talking about Linux.
I don't have that one yet.
Yeah, they're talking about Linux with the PowerPC processor, which also kind of ties right into this new Apple thing. And basically they're going over, you know, IBM's big push of doing Linux on the PPC processor, and Yellow Dog is coming out with this wicked stuff. Like, Yellow Dog has just come out with an announcement that they're now supporting, at least in beta right now, they're now supporting the 64-bit processors on the G5. So, like, this is a smoking thing now, you know what I mean? And for those of you who have not used Linux on a PPC yet, you are missing out, man. Linux runs so good on those things. It's unbelievable.
It runs better when the hardware supports it.
Yeah, well, you know, it runs better on better hardware. And, of course, PPC hardware is better than x86 hardware by far.
Now, I was making reference to the fact that, I mean, I would love to run Yellow Dog on this thing.
You say no, because you're a punk. Yeah.
And I have run it, and it runs great. The downside is I can't use the Airport Extreme with it.
But, you know, and I saw that, and reading through the article on Linux Magazine, there is somebody who's talking about that. And I guess a lot of people, and you probably never will have the Extreme, because the Broadcom chipset.
Well, that's also, the Extreme is G, right? It's 802.11G.
G. Right, I think so.
And the problem with, I think some of the problem with G is the band is also moves into the military.
No, band, you can get G cards to work with Linux. The problem that they have with the Extreme is that it's a Broadcom chipset, okay. And Broadcom is not interested in like sharing the wealth kind of thing. They don't want to tell anybody, you know, how to work with their chipset, so no one can write a driver for it. You know, it's all proprietary, and they're not going to write a driver because, you know.
Yeah, they're not going to make any money off of it.
Stupid, man. But, no, I guess in the article what it says a lot of people are doing who have that problem is they simply go out and buy one of those, you know, $15, $20, $30 USB. The USB dongles.
Oh, for
wireless USB.
Yeah. Wireless
network. It's only $15.
$20, $30, something like. Depends on where you go and find them. You know, you can find them online for cheap.
which ones work? Do they have a list of which ones work? Because I remember going through that whole that rigmarole with trying to find wireless PCMCIA cards that worked with Linux.
Well, you can go look for a Linksys version 3, or you can go and spend a little bit more money and you get the ones you know work, like the Orinoco gold, silver.
We're talking about the USB.
Yeah.
Now, the Linksys version, you said the Linksys has a USB.
Linksys does have a USB one.
Version X. That
it should be.
Three, yeah. Is it the same thing with the PC? What is it, the PC?
PCMCIA version 3.
The PC
works.
11, but the version 4
version
doesn't.
Version 4 doesn't because it uses a Broadcom chipset, right?
So even with the USB, we got the Broadcom chipset.
But still, I would say, you know, just look for the USB with something that does not have a Broadcom chipset. And but yeah, the article does mention people are just getting a USB dongle for it, and they're using that. And if they, you know, if they pop into Mac OS 9, because of course you don't need OS 10 if you're running Linux, they pop into OS 9, and then you know they can use their 802.11g.
Well, I guess the whole point is, right? I mean,
I got Dan all interested now.
The whole running down to the store now, looking through all the boxes for the USB stuff.
The whole thing comes down to the fact that, I mean, this day and age, 2004,
yes, right,
with the popularity of Linux always on the rise, there should not be any reason why Broadcom will not, if not release drivers.
All they got to do is cough up some specs so somebody can write
something.
Or release
the specs, yes, so drivers can be written. I think that's ridiculous, and I'd love to know why they don't do that.
Intellectual
property.
But don't you think that they could make, if they had, you know, any Linux programmer who's done drivers before, like Broadcom should be able to hire like two of these guys for a week and come up with a driver that works.
Oh, I don't disagree with you.
And then they could sell it and make money, because I'm sure there's some hordes of people who
they don't make any money off.
Oh, I'm sure there are hordes. If they put a driver, a working Linux driver on their website, you know, the code for it or something like that, and the binary, precompiled binary, so no one can, you know, mess with it. If they stuck that on their website and they sold it for $10-15 a pop, you know, every Linux person in the world would be grabing that thing and paying the money because there's a million of those cards out there.
Why should I, as a Linux user, have to pay for a driver?
Because it's their hardware.
But they don't charge Windows users.
Well, indirectly
they don't.
Do because indirectly yeah. they do because you're buying that's built into the cost of the card.
Yeah, well, then why isn't, but, you know.
But then again,
the
why
same
am I
token,
gonna,
it's the driver's not built right. in for Linux. But even yeah. so, there are Linux, I'm sure there are Linux people, I would pay it. You know, there are Linux people who would pay the extra
money
to
for
get,
programs.
Yeah.
If it's a program that I need.
To get it to work on their
if
computer.
If it works on the system, yeah, I don't have a problem paying for it. I mean, I'm not one of these people that everything must be free. I don't particularly believe in that because there are some things that you have to pay for that are just good enough that you have to pay for the damn right. thing.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between paying for an application and paying for drivers.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yes, there should be.
Now, if there's a third party involved that would go, like if Link's company said, hey, give me the specs, we'll write a driver. And, you know, maybe, because they went out of their way to write the driver.
Right.
But I think that if, and the sad fact is, there's probably tons of developers out there that would say, hey, if you just give us the specs, we'll write the driver for you.
Yep.
And it's not going to cost them anything.
Right.
And realistically speaking,
they would make money off it because they would sell those
right,
cards to
the
Linux
cards.
People who now had a driver, so they would buy it. Right. You're right. But you know, you would also, they could also do it the other way, and they could sell, you know, drivers for Linux cheap, and people would still buy them.
Well,
but what about
some
would,
of the G
what
stuff?
What would IBM be doing for wireless? I mean, IBM's pushing Linux.
Well, I think some of the G stuff, the reason you don't see drivers out for that yet on it is because the power amplifiers inside those can go out of band very easily. And the adjacent bands are military. In the I forget what the gigahertz it is off the top of my head. But that particular band, they're worried about, you know, if we write a driver for Windows, chances are very few people are going to hack that to make the card go out of band. They're just going to be happy to plug it in and go, oh, look, my network works. I'm not going to worry about it. Where Linux people, being the hackers, are going to have the open source code for that and going to reverse engineer it. And, you know, they're worried about people going out of band. And I think Broadcom or, you know, the chip manufacturers get in trouble for letting that happen.
So, in other words, what you're saying is they don't want to do it because Linux people may be more prone to hack it, but yet now you put it on such an insecure operating system that somebody can
write a
worm or a virus that would easily infect these machines, hack the driver themselves. now you have a whole bunch of people unknowingly popping into those bands.
I don't disagree with that argument or anything, but I think that has a lot to do with it there. And I can't remember where exactly I read that or if I heard that at work, because I say, you know, we at work, I do power amplifiers, and some of our stuff go into chips like that, chipsets like that. So I may have picked it up there as well, but I think that may have something to do with it. I'd have to research that a little bit more to find out.
Oh, you think he's lying?
I think it's a cop out.
It may be a cop out for the companies, yeah, but
I think it's a cop out.
Yeah.
And in this day and age, what could the U.S. military possibly have to hide? Come on.
Nothing at all. But
come on. Jeez. Don't believe that for a second. Did you know, though, that Tom's Hardware... You remember last week on the news, I was talking about Tom's Hardware Guide had this migrating from Windows to Linux article going on? Well, guess what? They just did part two this week. And, again, find it over at Tom's Hardware Guide. It's a pretty decent article. Well, for, like, a beginner person, it's a pretty decent article. And the interesting thing about this particular article is that there are accompanying multimedia files, such as, like, AVI files, where you can download them and check it out. You know what I mean? They give you the little on-screen presentation, you know, the whole audio and video kind of thing. It's pretty neat. I might have done it different myself, but it's pretty neat. And if you have somebody that's thinking about migrating from Windows to Linux and they don't know anything about it, you know, by all means, this might be just a ticket for them to get them interested. I appreciate that it did have a lot of effort going into it, you know, multimedia. Since we all know, our research with Dan about how difficult it is to make a multimedia file on Linux, it's like a screen recording session. I found it pretty interesting. I think you should check it out.
That's the Tom's Hardware, right?
Tom's Hardware, yes it is.
I should go to that site more often.
Tom's Hardware. You think so?
I should.
You should.
Because I don't think I've been there in a couple of years. Even when you brought up about it last week, and I ignored you. I've been there in a while.
Well, I'll tell you what. Sysadmin.
Magazine?
No, excuse me. Linux.com. Linux.com has another good article that pertains more to the learned Linux person.
Learned.
And it's entitled Sysadmin to Sysadmin, Bring Out Your Inner XArgs. And the reason that I grabbed this up and it stuck with me is because this is XArgs is like Dan's all-time favorite utility program to use.
It was until it stopped working for me.
Get a kick out of that. But again, this is you can find this article over at linux.com. And Sysadmin, Bring Out Your Inner XArgs, and it gives you all kinds of helpful and useful information about using XArgs to do all sorts of cool and important things under Linux. And indeed, it is a very useful program and utility to learn. We have... also on Linux.com, they have a plethora of really cool stuff this week, you know?
Plethora.
It's another 50-cent word, man. I'm working on my vernacular.
Your word for tonight is plethora.
That's right. Working plethora. On my vernacular. Linux breathes new life into old hardware. Nice article. about taking those old computers of yours and stuffing Linux on them to get some more use.
Stuffing them garbage.
That's right, man. And this article, in fact, does give an example about a gentleman who bought a ThinkPad 6000E, which is, of course, an IBM laptop, for like $300. And there are 366 P2, 256 of PC66 SD RAM, and a 9 gig hard drive. Which, by today's standards, not by my standards, but by today's standards, is pretty darn slow. And this gentleman slaps Arch Linux, I believe, on it, and is touting the wonders of Linux on this laptop, which most certainly would be slower than a dying slug under the newest Windows operating system, XP.
Put XP on there and go off provided the coffee before it even
that's
boots.
Right, provided that you could ever finish the install. He says the 6000E is certainly no slug after booting into the OS. I never found myself twiddling my thumbs for too long. Nifty. Of course, we have all known this for years, that you can rescue old computers with Unix and make them work fantastically. In fact, at home right now, I happen to have two servers that are P233 MMXs. And they're not running Linux, but they're running NetBSD. Just because I wanted something
to be different.
I like NetBSD too, so I put NetBSD on. So I slapped NetBSD on them. They're running, man, they run my MP3 server. They run DNS. They run DHCP. They run an NTP server on there. All kinds of good stuff. Never have to touch them. They just go and go and go. They always keep up with everything else on my network, so hey, it's good stuff. And I know Dan over here somewhere has a time bomb.
What, is that 486?
Yeah, Dan's 486.
It's under there.
Oh.
It's under the switch.
Oh, I do see it, yep. Dan has a 486 running Linux. 486, what is that? How fast is that thing, man?
You're 66.
46DX 266?
No, 266? No.
DX2 slash 266, yeah.
No, I think it's actually, I'm mistaken. It's one of those 90, Pentium 90.
Oh, it's a P90.
It's a 4, was it a 486 that goes to a P90? Equivalent to a P90? It's some funky amalgamation that we got. They pulled out of work before they... Or maybe that one isn't. Maybe that one's just a 486, 66, DX266.
486.
But what exactly does it do? 66.
But that's his print server, man.
It's my print and Samba server.
I was just
the thing is, there's some quirk with, I don't know, the LPR on Slackware 7. It's running real old Slackware. I think it's 7.1.
And why, you know, I asked him the other day, why is it running so old Slackware? Why don't you upgrade it? And he says, man, because then I would have to dig it out and, like, plug a keyboard and a monitor into it, man.
So it runs, but for some reason, when you send a print job, you either have to manually restart the, you know, go into LPC and restart the print server or whatever. So I just created a cron job that kills the print server and starts it every 4 minutes. That way, you know, you might send the print job to it and it comes out four minutes later, but at least it works. And that's all I care about.
4 minutes to print out one sheet of paper. Yeah!
Or I could just go in and manually do it myself.
Well, didn't you kind of already do it manually by, you know, by sending it to the print job? I don't know. Something to pick on you about anyway. But... anyway, folks, we are past our allotted time for the first segment of the Linux Link Tech Show. So I believe what we will do now is take a quick breather break and play you a wonderful song, which you can find, by the way, on the Nopix CD. This thing is called PenguinPlanet.org, and it's one of their demo songs that's on there, and then I happened to like it and thought it was pretty cool, so we'll play it here. Check it out. Only... on Nopix and the LinuxLink.net.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there is the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together.
Listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
And we're back. This is the Linux Link Tech Show. This Wednesday, April 14th. Almost 9:50 already. 9:50 in the evening. Year 2004, and we are awaiting the wonderful words of Daniel Washko. Dan.
What?
We woke him up there.
That's how you really put somebody on the spot, man. Just completely out in the ozone there.
I'm still trying to figure out why the OSS is not working 100% through my ALSA.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were going to talk in this second segment here about Linux on the desktop.
Right.
And whether, well, of course we all think that it is ready, but, you know, why we think it's ready. And, I'm just, you know, sitting here soliciting opinions about that.
Might I know Alan's got a mouthful.
Might you have one? Well, but that's a different story.
Didn't say it was about the topic.
Okay. Is it ready for the desktop? Yes, I believe it is.
Why?
But not for, like, not for the inexperienced, though, at times. I mean, it's very easy to install for everyone here in the room and most of the people listening to us, most likely, on it. But if I handed the disk to my parents, they would have trouble with it. Uh-huh. But then again, but by the same token, they would have trouble with a Windows disk too.
See, now this is one of my major points of contention, my major bones of contention with people who all the time tell me that Linux is not ready for the desktop because it's difficult to install. Now, my response to that is, the reason it's difficult to install is it really is not any more difficult to install than Windows, and in many cases it's much, much easier. But Windows comes pre-installed on these people's computers, so they never have to do an install.
They never have.
So I agree with you. You know, that's one of the things I was going to bring up.
Yeah.
Right. That it's not an apples to apples comparison.
That's right, because it's already on there. You know.
Now, the other portion that people who have it installed also may have problems with it, you know, most other people, you know, who are already using it wouldn't have problems with is installing things on it. But again, that's nothing more difficult than, you know, if you had someone properly, someplace properly to learn how to do it, it's no more difficult than going, clicking on setup, what is it, setup.exe.
Sure.
And having it set up.
Right, exactly.
The difference being, you know, if you have RPMs, it's the same type of thing with RPMs, you know, just as setup is.
Right, and a lot of the window managers, like the big ones which normally come, they're the ones that, you know, you find pre-installed, I guess, is not really the word I'm looking for, but the ones that are already set up on the new installations, as far as a window manager, you usually get GNOME or KDE, and they already know how to deal with RPMs or packages of such and such type.
Yeah, whatever package manager.
You just click on it and let it go, you know.
I found a comment here. This was an article from thestar.com, which I'm not sure exactly where. I think it's a Canadian newspaper, Toronto Star. And it was just a question of what kind of threat you think Linux poses to Microsoft Windows.
The Canadians, eh?
And from the Canadians.
Eh?
And this is what people wrote in to say. And you know, there's a whole bunch of different comments and stuff, but this one I think was really good. So we give proper credit. Philip Webb from Toronto. Windows is like eating at a big fast food chain. It's quick, flashy, and makes you fat and lazy. Every so often you catch a virus or worms. Linux is good home cooking and a well-equipped kitchen with gardens, with a garden to grow stuff to and lots of friendly neighbors to advise you. You have to put in a little time and effort and learn how to use the tools. But once you do, you'll never want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just thought that was a really good comment. I think that pretty much sums it up with Linux as well. You do have to learn a little bit more. You do have to want to learn a little bit about your operating system.
Sure.
But once you do, you get so much more out of it.
But, and, you know, there again, though, it really depends on how much knowledge you have to begin with, though. Because Linux, at this point in time, Linux on the desktop is just as much pointy-clicky as XP is, or as the Macintosh is, because you can make them look just like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
can make Linux work just like XP. You can make it work just like Mac OS 9, and you can make it work pretty dang close to OS 10. You know? So it's still just as pointy clicky. And I think a lot of the holdback, at least a lot of the holdback that I see on it, is that it's different. And people do not want to
People do not like learn. To embrace change.
Yeah. It's not like it's hard. It's not any harder than learning Windows, because if you put a kid who hasn't touched a computer next to a Windows computer and next to a Linux computer, you know, they'll use either one and they don't care, and they're just as proficient, because, you know, as long as you make the interfaces similar, they're good to go. They don't care. Getting an older person to do that, you know what, the older person wants to have Office on their computer. And no matter how many times you tell them, well, you can use like Star Office or Open Office, and they're perfectly good Office suites, which are many times a lot faster and more responsive than Microsoft's version. Certainly, many, many times cheaper, and work just as well. You know, they don't like it because it's not.
It's different. It's hard to change because they're used to seeing those little, you know, little clippy pop up for everything.
You know, and then I find another really big thing that irritates me to no end is that the average computer user, first of all, I'm of the opinion that the average computer user should be banned from using a computer. second of all, the average computer user does not read. Has anybody else noticed this?
The other portion, the problem with that is there's no manuals to read anymore anyways.
No, but even if there were, they don't read. Not only do they not read the manuals, but they cannot read, you know, they can't even read, they won't read, like, the icons on the screen.
Well, yeah.
They won't read, you know, they won't read the menus that are on their application. You know what I mean? For instance, if you have, you know, Star Office next to Open Office, and Open Office, they have, you know, to import a document, it's, I don't know, file grab or something like that, and in Star Office, it's file import. They will not read those menus. You know, they look at you dumb and say, I don't know how to do it, because it's different. It's not different. It just says a different word. It's the same thing, you know. Same thing, same place, different word. but they won't read it
on,
to tell.
Depending on the age of the user, they're also like, oh my God, if I touch this, is it going to break? Because the last thing people want to do is break their computers. Because then they have to come back to like calling their kids in to fix it. It makes them look bad. I installed a tight VNC on my parents' computer just because I got tired of picking up the phone and going, okay, read me the menu, because obviously I don't use Windows enough to know what the heck's going on over there.
Right.
I'd be like, okay, now what are we doing here? Now, okay, read me the file menu or read me such and such a menu, and trying to work it over the phone. Now I can just, click on this button and tell me the number, because I have a WinIP config on an icon there. Like, click on this button. Okay, now tell me the number that shows up there. And I type that in, and I get their session up on my screen, here in Pennsylvania, and I fix whatever their problem is. But, my parents are afraid of breaking the computer all the time.
Right. I just don't know. I tell you a lot of times it just really baffles me.
What I think will help it a lot is if they're doing now, Walmart is starting to sell, has been selling Linux boxes. But I think I read where they're actually going to start putting those in the store as well.
Yeah, I did hear something
about
that.
With the Sun Java stuff mm-hmm. on. I think that'll actually help people, because they'll be looking at that going, well, it's $100 less. This one's $100 less than that one that has Windows on it. And they may not pay attention to the fact that it's not Windows, because that's already set up to have the modem work and everything for them. So as long as they're not going to worry about being an AOL customer, which is the other reason I don't get my parents off of Windows, is because they're fixed on AOL. And frankly, it works for them, so I'm just going to let them have it, because they're used to it now.
Right.
And to, to try to get the... Well, it's just easier. Like I said, it's hard for me.
See, now, he did that nice thing in cave for his parents. You know what I made my parents do? I made them get a broadband connection.
I would love them to do that. I keep trying to tell them, one, you're going to be paying less.
Right.
Than you would for AOL. I said, two, and you're not going to notice any difference. And the difference being is, instead of having that nice little application that pops up, you're going to hit... Mozilla or Firefox, whatever I put down there as a browser. Dad will still be able to go find his card games online and all the other things that he does, and Mom can still write the letters.
And they said no
because it's like, no, I'm used to this. And my other thing is, I have to push him is to get an external modem, because obviously the Win modem that it's built in is a piece of crap and doesn't work under Linux. But for the whole $50 that it would cost them to buy an external modem, they're used to that. They don't want to change.
And I think that's one of the
same kind of thing, though, don't you, Dan? From your dad,
I think that's one of the biggest hurdles is people are so accustomed to using Windows or whatever operating system that they've grown familiar with or comfortable with, regardless whether their comfort level is experience has been one of constant turmoil and frustration, that when presented with a different choice, even though that the choice closely resembles what they're used to, they're still hesitant on switching. Case in point, OpenOffice, wonderful application, but more often than not, I keep hearing people say, "Well, it's not Windows. I mean, it's not Office. It's not Word. It's not X, Y, and Z." Well, yeah, it'll do everything that does. It'll do more stuff than that does. Well, I'm just not used to it. I'm not comfortable with it. Same thing with Linux. And granted, you can set up a window manager to look exactly like Windows XP, but still they're hesitant because of the comfort level on it. And if they don't have somebody to guide them along, I think that makes a big difference right there. Even if they do, sometimes it's problematic. But I know my wife could honestly care less what operating system she uses, so long as it gets what she needs to get done. And, of course, I'd like to think that she'd champion the cause of Linux just for being my wife. But, since I've set her up on Linux, that the laptop... Beautiful.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
The high quality show here, folks. Soundproof booth. Yeah. No, we don't have the phone hybrid yet. Anyway, the laptop even though it's a Frankenstein laptop, and interesting thing is the keyboard stopped working the other day, but I got to work it again.
The Frankenstein one?
Oh, I was like, oh, man, here we go again. Now what? How am I going to get the keyboard to work? But for some reason, I just plugged another keyboard into the back, and you know, I booted it up, and everything was working fine. I pulled the keyboard out, and hey, everybody was happy. I don't know what kind of quirk happened there, but, you know, and the laptop, for how abused it is, sits down there and just chugs away day after day. You know, you don't really need to reboot it. The only time my wife reboots it was she has a problem connecting to wireless, and that usually means that somebody pulled the plug on the switch down there. You know, so it's not actually up and running anymore. But, you know, she's been using... I set her up with KDE originally because that was the closest thing that you could probably get to Windows.
Yeah.
She would be familiar with. And her only complaint was, you know, being a laptop, it was kind of older system, 64 megs of RAM. She was like, well, it's a little slow.
KDE's rather slow there.
Yeah, and I was like, okay. So I set her up with Ice Window Manager, and she was so happy with that. It runs lightning fast and does everything she wants to do.
Yep.
You know, sometimes there's little frustrations, but those frustrations occur in just about any operating system.
Sure.
But, you know, then again, there's, you know, like my dad, I have so much trouble trying to get him to switch over. And I don't understand why. I just don't understand why. Because he's not familiar with it.
Yeah, well, I'd have the same problem with my father, only because of the games he plays and stuff. So I'd end up having to, like, dual boot the machine for him.
Right.
That's a tough one, the games.
The games are tough, yeah, because there's... I mean, there are ones out there, but they're not the ones that, like, everybody wants to play.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
But now, let me ask you a question. Like, what about stuff like Codeweavers and Winforlin? You know, that kind of... Especially Winforlin. I would love to hear if someone that I knew actually tried that and could give me a good review of it.
What, Winforlin?
Winforlin, yes.
Well, I'd give you a good review of the Codeweavers crossover plug-in. Works really great. Except on my machine over there with the ALSA problem and the OSS. I can't get sound. But the laptop downstairs, it works like a top. Again, my biggest complaint with that is you're not running native Linux applications.
Right.
Which is the, you know, be it as it may.
Right, but I mean, for some people, the stumbling block is that they have such and such application that they must use that does not have an equivalent Linux application. For existence. It's long day. For example, my father-in-law, who runs this particular baseball program, it's a game, okay? It's only been made for the Win32 platform, only, and it will not run on anything else anywhere, ever. And he loves this thing. And my one stumbling block on getting, you know, because I hate going over to his house to fix this stupid computer, you know, because he runs Windows on it and surfs around the web and gets every virus in the world, and they all, you know, and then I'm like the tech support guy, so they call me, I have to reinstall Windows. I hate doing that. The only thing keeping me from getting him running Linux is that he needs to be able to run his little baseball program that he plays. Now, if I could figure out, if I had any
Dad's
experience...
The same thing with the hunting program.
Yeah, if I had any experience doing this Winforlin business, which I started looking at today, I could simply, you know, install Linux on his computer and install Winforlin and put, you know, Windows 98 or 95 in there and let him run his baseball program on that, and everything's good good and golden, so to speak. And then, you know, that also makes administration, remote administration and things a lot easier on me. But I don't have any really good information on that yet. So please send me your reviews and your thoughts.
You know, one of the problems, another problem I have with those kind of applications is they cost a significant amount of money.
Yes, they do.
And...
But Winforlin is, like, available for free download. I think it only costs money if you use it in a business environment.
Are you sure about that? Because the last time I checked, they wanted $99 for it.
I I was hitting the website today. It was
get on the website. We'll get a third party to verify your your claims or not.
I wasn't sure because they don't give a lot of information about it, but the only thing I saw about purchasing was if you're running a business.
And what my feeling is, again, I'm not opposed to paying for software if it gets, you know, does what I want it to do.
Right.
And that's, I don't have a problem with that. And sure, I'd like to, you know, pay for the development process or contribute to it in some way. But I think what becomes difficult to convince somebody to switch over to Linux is that if
Win
you say...
Winterlin 5.0 is $89.98 at Walmart.
If you switching somebody over to Linux and then you say, well, if you want to run Word, you still have to have a legal copy of Word. So that costs anywhere upwards of $100. And you say, well, you can get Crossover Office, which will run you $30, I think, or you can get Winterlin, which is going to run you $90. So now you're at the price of almost the cost of Windows 98, what it used to be. Now I think Windows XP is about $100 upgrade or $200 for the full version. And, you know, you tack on some of that other stuff. You say, well, I want a QuickTime plugin, well, the Crossover plugin.
By the way, just not to cut you off.
Extra money there.
But just a quick tidbit of information. For those of you who do actually run Windows, and you should not, for those of you who do, and you go out and buy the upgrade CD for the next version of your operating system, you are a fool. An absolute fool, because invariably it will break down, and then you have to go through 17 CDs to get your system running again. All right, continue on.
Well, what I was saying is,
I had to poke fun at
one of the arguments that you might use to somebody going over Linux is a lot more cost effective. But then if you're trying to run Windows applications on it, that's not necessarily the case.
No, because you're still buying the Windows.
You're buying the Windows, then you got to buy the programs that will actually allow you to run the Windows applications. You can fool around with Wine and do it yourself, and you know sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Or VMware.
Well, VMware, now that's a nice chunk of change, too.
VMware or the Winterlin or the Code Weavers stuff. But see, here's the thing. If you're minded enough to actually sit down and think about this, you also should stop and think about how much your time and your lost productivity costs you, because with a product like, even if you have to run a Windows app, right, if you're running it under VMware or something like that, under Linux, like, you don't have to worry about the stuff crashing all the time. You don't have to worry about getting all that data loss and you know, all the reboot and restart time and all that other crap, because you can just can it and bring it right back up again. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
So it's, you know, you're...
Well, I see what you're saying.
You get
gaining
an increase in your productivity, which also costs time, too. So, and it's, you know, stability. But, I mean, your average user isn't going to think that, but, you know, that's something that I would consider if you, you know, you have to run a Windows application, and especially if it's something that's like prone to having problems.
Why not using it anyhow?
Well, if you have to, you know what I mean.
Nobody has to.
Yeah. Well, that's another bone of contention, because some people are unnecessarily stuck on Windows programs that there are completely suitable replacements for. You know what I mean? Quake. They have a Quake for Linux, you know. Word. They have, you know, KWord and GNOME Writer and, you know.
Open Office
for the Office Suite. And how many Office Suites are there for Linux now? There's a zillion of them, right? There's GNOME's Office Suite, there's SIAG, there's StarOffice, there's OpenOffice, there's the new WordPerfect Suite that they're doing again, the new old WordPerfect Suite. There's KDE's Office Suite, and you know, a whole bunch of other ones, too. So that's, you know, there really is no excuse there, especially since the vast majority of those are absolutely free, and Office costs you, what, $300? Microsoft Office.
I think it's like three.
Which version are you buying? The full version?
Yeah, full version.
That's like 600 or something bucks.
All right, so we'll...
I think. I'm not sure.
We'll say somewhere in between 300 bucks and more than you can possibly afford. What else? Browsers. A lot of people use... Well, a lot of smart people, anyway, they use Mozilla on Microsoft. Mozilla or Firefox or Netscape or something like that. Of course, all of those are immediately available under Linux.
I hit that twice.
Well, yeah, that's true. Now, I can see that there's some areas that are difficult. Desktop publishing. Again, you have like Microsoft Publisher, which is, or Photo Suite, whatever, that allows you to make like little newsletters and stuff and brochures. Now, there really isn't an equivalent yet on Linux. Now, so, OpenOffice will do some of that.
Okay, well, there are some that come close, right? Like
Scribus.
Scribus, right.
Right, but I mean, if you take Scribus and compare it to Microsoft Publisher, there really isn't a comparison there. Scribus is more comparable to Quark.
Right.
But then again, you know, the average person isn't going to pull out their copy of Quark to do a newsletter. That's a little more sophisticated in advance. But what I'm saying, there isn't the equivalent yet of that kind of desktop publishing application for the general home user. The kind of garbage you get with your scanner when you buy a scanner or a printer.
Right.
You know, something like that. They don't have that kind of equivalent. And another thing is, what we've talked about repeatedly in the past, is the video editing.
Yes.
Home video editing. Not necessarily professional, high-end, but just this home video editing is a touchy subject. And last but not least, which would have been brought up, is the games. Now, there's stuff like the Trans Gamers... Transcode or Trans Gaming, I think it's called, has some patches and stuff to make a lot of games compatible through Wine, but definitely Microsoft has the market cornered on that for computers. It even kicks Mac's butt.
However, if you're really into games, why don't you just get a game console?
That is true,
but they run better. And I have found the majority of people who are really into games already have a game console. Anyway.
Well, yeah, but there's still a whole...
Or four.
Couple of...
Yeah,
four. There's a handful of genres of really significant games that do not come out on those game consoles. And they only come out on PCs. Now...
Not anymore.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of games that don't come out on the consoles. Now, you have the flip side to that is Microsoft's Xbox, which they're trying to get closer to the integration of their desktop software, the workstation, the Windows line, and the Xbox line. And eventually, I guess what pundits say is they're trying to take control over the entertainment center in your household.
Right.
Which
they've been trying for years.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know the reviews on these things, but I hear both sides of here like, oh, the Xbox is poised to become the next entertainment center. And then other people are saying it's not selling. It's doing horrendous in the market. And,
which is why they dropped the price $50.
Well, right, and they can't sell the games. You know?
Yeah,
I don't know what the truth is there.
It's because the $50 it cost that they dropped the console, that's how much of the games cost, too. So.
I would say, yeah, games are always $50. Well, although I tend to buy them used because they're just a few dollars cheaper.
Yeah, but no one spends the $50 to buy them new, man, there are no used games to buy.
Well, there's always used games.
you don't have the used games. You have the discount games.
Yes, right.
Like Big Mother Truckers. You could buy that thing new for like $9. You could buy it used for $5, or you could buy it new for $9.
Jetline Radio or something. I think I bought this, like, it was like a double demo set that they were still selling. It was like $5. But no, there are. I mean, there are good games for all of those as well. It depends on what genres you're looking for. You know, like the baseball games. I haven't found anything hunting, so I can't, push my parents on, my father on to getting a game console. Although he's got my old Dreamcast right now.
Right.
And I gave him a Air Force Fighter game that I picked up for like $3.99 for that one. He loves that one there, but it's tough. There's just different games available. Yeah.
I don't know. But folks, we are quarter after the hour. This is something we will probably have to continue discussing. Please, if you're listening to this and you have an opinion, by all means, shoot it to us over at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. We'd love to hear from you and see what you all think about this. Any closing comments, gentlemen? And I use that term loosely.
For Alan.
Get a not
I'm all man.
Get a not fix this and like give it to all your friends.
Yes? No?
What? Oh, closing comments?
Yeah. This is my closing comment.
But more people should do that. Hand out Nopix discs. I don't know why Link doesn't.
Hey, I do, man.
Did you just turn down the volume of the whole thing?
No.
Oh.
In fact, I carry a Nopix disc with me everywhere.
How do you keep a Nopix disc? I can't keep a hold of
it. Because I have to keep burning them off, man. I keep one in my briefcase. If someone needs it, I like give it to them, and then I go home that night and burn another one and stick it into my briefcase. So
I keep a couple at work and like give them out to engineers. I don't know whether they ever use them, but it's my little bit of evangelism that I do.
Oh, well, I guess that's it for this week then, huh? We can say that this show is dedicated to potted meat products.
Spam.
Turkey spam. When spam regular is just not good enough. Turkey spam.
When you want to have that light spam experience.
Well, there's turkey spam and there's light turkey spam and light spam and spam.
Oh.
So you have four options to make your spam cheesecake out of.
Dan is a professional spam eater. Which would explain the other sometimes.
We saw on the Food Network.
That explains the random smells in the office here.
That there was a spam eating contest, and apparently you get the large can of spam, and the fastest person came in at around 1 minute. And I honestly think I can eat a whole can of spam in less than a minute.
Those now, big, like, 1 pound can of spam.
Just
cans.
A regular
size. Yeah, man.
I think
we've got a game for next week.
Now, we had
a can of pictures of this one, boys and girls.
We had a can of spam, but I never tried it out. You know, it's kind of being piggish, but I think I can eat a can of spam in less than a minute.
I think for this one, though, we do have to trade and give Dan the seat next to the door, though.
No, we'll just wait until we get the hybrid working. He calls from the cell phone in the bathroom.
Oh. It's coming out both ends.
Oh, man. And on that note, thank you for listening to our April 14th, 2004 episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. See you next week.
Have a good one.
Good night.
Pulling up Link. Pulling up Link Tech Show. Pulling up Link. Pulling up Link Tech Show.